accession number 24195, Reel 7.
Mr. Luff, Reel 7. We're talking about the sinking of HMS Capel and Affleck.
Capel 85, Capel, I remember that. I remember that.
And this is on the 26th of December.
Boxing Day. Well, it was a beautiful, sunny day. You'd have thought it was spring. And we was closed up on Agun, I always remember that. No, to lie, later on Agun. What happened, the skipper said, "You've had no Christmas, lads." He said, "Off watch, get the cinema out. Those off watch can watch." So we had the two mastic tables, we had a limp for that. Oh, definitely, I didn't know she was down. Anyway, had the length of that, put the cinema up, and we was watching a film. I think it was a Fred Astaire film, and what was that name? Anyway, we was watching it, and I just got on the top bunk, because you had two sets of three together. So I'd climbed up on the top. We had waterproof covers for each mattress and that, and I was laid right across watching, and I remember I kicked my boots off. And as one went thump, there was a thump. And we knew what it was straight away. Down, drop down, put your boots on. When we got up top, the Capel had been hit. And as far as we knew, the Affleck cut across and you didn't see nothing, actually. We knew the Capel had hit. We skirted right round, screening, whatever. It was near Cherbourg, and they all come out from Cherbourg and picking up survivors, whatever. And we was doing the screening, but we laid over the Capel, K485, and she was just below the surface, nose on. The stern pennant numbers was shown. And as far as we was concerned, that was the end of the Capel. Never seen nothing other than that.
What about survivors? You pick any up?
No, we never. We was too busy screening that. The survivors were all coming out from Sherbrooke, all...
Did you get a contact? Did you get any contact on the submarine that did
well,
it?
Well, I couldn't say. I don't think so. We've never done much depth charging because you couldn't do in that vicinity with all the survivors and anyone about. We did screen, take a long sweep and that, but I don't think there was. You might have one time up with another. You might have dropped a few charges, but nowhere near where they were. I know Affleck, the survivors I spoke to, some were burnt with the smoke screen. Used to be apparently acid, and you could be burnt. And I met a bloke who was burnt off the Affleck when I was at a reunion. And that was him. And after that, the main war ended for our group. I saw there was left, the originals was us, Garleys, and Balfour. But we never used to see a lot of Balfour. Us and the Garleys operated together. But it was nothing like previous big sweeps and all that. It was escorting convoys across till the end of the war.
Across what?
Across the channel.
And anything in particular happened?
Not for the next few months. Might have been, but I mean, he was so used to... Anything happened, it just went out of one ear on into the other, like you might say. You were so used to it. Charging, it was all over the place. And, no, I can't say it was. Anything definite that I remember.
Now, you refused the opportunity to become a leading singer, or to try for that. Can you just talk a bit about that? Wouldn't be in that time, would it?
No, it was before that, but it was in the... No, January. It was a couple of months between... Let's see, where are we? I would say it was around about the April time, and he said, you could be the youngest leading hand, he said, in the group. He said, me and someone else was picked forward, shoved forward, but I'd talk with one of the chiefs, probably the chief, and I said, I won't carry no weight. I said, amongst all the old boys, I said, it'd be making life a misery for yourself. Another 2 years, yeah. I said, but I'm happy where I am and I don't want to shift the ship. I tell you, at the time, they was taking men off to go in the army. And my mate, I mentioned his name, he lived at Mulfrey Bay, little Taffy. and a frog marched him off. He was going in the army. Hey, he's calling out, I'll skip on the bridge. You won't get me no army. Oh, it was terrible. Yeah. He didn't want to go no army. Well, none of us did. I thought we were safe because I was a volunteer. And anyway, they did take a few. But it frightened the life out of them. A mate of mine at home, Jim Whiteman, he would never forget he was in the Navy. He wore army uniform with a Matlow's front, Dickie front. Yeah, would never have the shirt on. He was adamant that he wasn't going to be in the army. And that's how we finished up. We went on there until the stabilisers went, going up the Irish Sea.
Now tell us about that. Oh. What had happened to the stabilisers?
Oh, we did, as the war ended, a submarine gave itself up off Portsmouth, off Weymouth.
Was that before or after the stabilisers?
No, that was before.
So tell us about that first then.
For the submarine.
Do you know the number?
No, I couldn't tell you. I did have a photo of it once, and it's probably in my brother's gear, what I left with the old man.
And would this be into April then? May?
No, May. It was after the war. The war had finished. And we were still floating about, and they was giving ourselves up all over the place.
What do you remember of this submarine surrender?
Submarine, took a boat over there. Whaler went over there, and I was part of the crew. We dropped the ordnance mechanic and others. They took the breech block out of the gun, and they took survivors off, people off, and just escorted it back into Weymouth. Wasn't a lot to do with
it. So it was Weymouth, not Portsmouth?
Weymouth, yeah. Portland is the actual place. And
what was the attitude of the German crew?
Friendly. Maybe the war was over. They were so relieved it was untrue. But
what do you remember of the actual V-Day? What did you do?
V-Day?
Any celebrations?
I suppose we did when we were ashore, but I can't remember. We went up the Irish Sea. I suppose it was on the same trip. We was finished. As we went up the Irish, turned into the Irish Sea, as we was going up the Irish Sea, this spring-loaded stabiliser was ripped, and it started smacking us up the back, all the length of the ship.
I don't know, what was the stabiliser? Can you just explain it a bit more?
On the side of the hull, there's what they call stabiliser, two small wings. They only come out about 2 or 3 foot, I think, and they run the length of the hull. Well, one of them ripped off, and that was every time the waves hit, it was sprung back, and it hit the ship, and it was like being in a drum, and it just wasn't a bang. It'd give you nightmares. Yeah, how bad it was. You thought it was half the ship was coming apart. Anyway, we got back into Belfast. They went down, cut it off, and as far as we was concerned, the war was over. Then we was taken round to Hartlepool. Don't know why we went all that way around, but we did. And
the whole ship was, or just the
ship was, yeah, the whole ship.
So you decommissioned it
in Hartlepool.
And what do you remember of the decommissioning? How did they actually do it?
Just the ceremony, the skipper gave us a talking to and tell how grateful he was, and he come down, the individual blokes like me who'd been on it from start to finish, he even shook hands as we come away. And that was that. Polish ship with a destroyer was alongside us, so I know they was all looking. And the milkman went along the front, there was houses, the opposite. But Hartlepool was a very friendly place. At the time, Bruce Woodcock was coming along as a British champion, and Jack London was there. We used to go round his pub. And Newcastle was a lovely place to go and have a couple of nights up there. And that was it. Back, I went into Pompey Barracks. We all separated after all that time. And went into Pompey.
Portsmouth.
Yeah, Portsmouth. Anson Block on Victoria Barracks. Not Victoria. Not at first.
And this would be May or June 45?
June 45. Into July now, I think.
So you actually decommissioned in July?
In July, yeah. We went up there and we decommissioned them. As far as I know.
And how long were you in Portsmouth for?
Portsmouth? I was in there Once I got in Portsmouth, I've always tried to get out of it because I didn't like the barrack attitude of it all, and it was terrible atmosphere. Sleeping in hammocks and on a big halls, like, you know, hundreds of blokes. Anyway, done the usual thing, finally to go down to have it, the overflow barrack, Stockheath actually. And went down there, started building a race course for the gentry, what they call it, jumps and all we built. The skipper, I think, owned the land we was on, and he was preparing for the civilian life. And anyway, we had a good time doing it, went shooting with the gentry.
You mentioned that last time, but you did that both times, did you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, well, you was there. You knew the drill, see? And
how long were you there for?
Till I got a draft chip. Now, the first one was the Formidable came back from South Africa with £14 million worth of gold on, which sounded a lot at the time. And I was drafted aboard the, whether it was permanent, I don't know. But anyway, I was drafted aboard the Formidable, and for a couple of weeks I was unloading gold and all different stores from South Africa. I remember unloading the gold because I got three ladders to, with a £20,000 block on my shoulder. And it was all that long.
And when did you join her? We've looked it up and we think this was as late as March 46. So you'd been sort of on general duties at Havant.
All the way round, we used to do all that type of thing, like work, take us out as a work party, and we enjoyed ourselves, basically, knocking down brick shelters and all that, like, tidying up the camp. Met a few nice blokes. And my mate Ron off the Faulkner, he come round and visited me after the war.
Now, other than unloading the gold, what else happened about on the Formidable?
The Formidable?
Was it a cruiser?
No, one of the biggest aircraft carriers in the...
Sorry, yeah.
Big aircraft. One of the biggest aircraft carrier. You get lost on there. And I was on there for a time, but being off small ships didn't really suit. It's too big.
Yeah. In what way? Tell me about it. Cause
you get lost. After, it's like being in a block of flats, if you like. You'd, from one office to another, and you try to find everything you had to find, and if it was unfamiliar, after a while you got used to it, but there was nothing... There was a spare crew on there, and there was nothing organised.
And what was your job on the crew? I mean,
as an AB, I worked the ship, looked after gear, and but other than that, I can't really. I know when we go in the cricket team, because I caught a even line once, and got there was a gale force wind blowing, and by luck, I happened to be out. I got outside the guardrail. It was always dropping out, so I got inside the guide room, bump, it fell right in my hand, the even line, got the boat along, the tag alongside. And the left-hand commander said, "Duff," he said, "do you play cricket?" I said, "No, sir." He said, "You look as if you do." He said, "You're in the team." And anyway, I got a draft ship to the Mason after that. Anyway, that was a submarine depot ship.
So that was at Dartmouth, was it?
No, there was. I went to the college at Dartmouth. That's where we was based. But we was on a ship in the middle of the river for the Wye.
Now, so what about the Maidstone? That looks like the one that's March 46, actually. So
yeah, Maidstone was a submarine depot ship. Went back to Plymouth, and I was on her for 3 or 4 weeks. It wasn't a bad ship.
What were you doing there on board the Maidstone?
Just upkeep of the ship, keeping it tidy, keeping it clean, working the upper deck. Never went to sea on it. But it was everything about Navy then, men were being demobbed and it was all 6 and 7. When I got to Dartmouth in May, before that I'd got a draft ship foreign. I think that was in about the January 46. No, the war was still on there. No, as I left, went back to Pompey Barracks, I got a draft ship to pick up an LST or a landing barge at, in Glasgow. Greenock. That was what I was going back to. While on leave, fortunately, I developed gastric enteritis, the only time I was ever sick in the Navy. And my dear friend, the doctor, gave me a, which I was bad, I couldn't move. And I got excused, and got in touch with the Navy, and they said, well, stay where you are till you're fit. Went back, I missed the draft. So otherwise I'd been out Far East. And that was from there, back to the usual thing. I was in Victory Barracks for a time on the, what's that? That was a good barracks right on the beach at Southsea.
Now, what exactly were you doing at Dartmouth? Because that was your last...
Dartmouth was care and maintenance, C&M party, which, as the ships was paying off, our base ship was Wye, river-class sloop. The Wye, W-Y-Y-E, and nice ship. And I think another Thornton, lieutenant commander, and one leg. I surprised him once, opened his cabin door and he's putting his leg on. No need for that laugh, he said, you've seen him before. And anyway, he's a nice bloke. We was on there, and what we had to do overnight time, there was a string of ships, including the Devonshire, I think, the cruiser, laid down the river. So what we had to do was put lights on them of an evening, make sure they was tied up properly and everything like that. We had the use of motorboats. We had a 5-month holiday. And it was terrific. I could use a boat whenever I liked, skimming dishes, the Navy fast boat. And we used to go sailing. We used to go fishing. The bosun on the Caroline had his demob. He must have had a demob quit because he came out to us as a supply boat, RASC. And he looked a seaman. He had all hat on the side. And he said to me, Luffy, he said, he knew me from before. He said, you was on the Gore, weren't you? I said, yeah. He said, we used to see you when you come back. He said, what do you do? He said, you're sitting here quartermaster watching blokes come back and forwards. That was my turn to be quartermaster. He said, why don't you get the rod and line out? He said, this river hasn't been fished for all the war years. He said, and there's congrio as big as you in here. I said, how do you do it then, Chief? He said, well, get some line, heavy line out the folks hall. He said, and I'll get you a triple hook. He got me a triple hook. He said, you won't need bait. He said, all you want is silver paper. So take it with a pinch of salt, get you a room. I said, yeah, all right, I will. And that night, I was sitting there with the ship's cap, 2 o'clock in the morning. I say that night, it must have been any night. And I thought myself, I will have a go at that. I've got the line out, cod line it was, and put the hook on, put silver paper on, wrapped it all round. Catamaran alongside, I jumped on it, threw the hook over, tied it on the, went back and had a cup of tea, tied it on the guardrail, and he told me how to kill him. He said, you hit him on the base of the skull if you get lucky enough to get a conger. So had a cut of me cup of tea. Next thing I know, the guardrails pulling as if so, 2 or 3 blokes have got hold of it. So anyway, back I went, it took me all my nerve to... Anyway, I pulled it in, but I haven't got anything to hit it with. When it comes over with this great big snake's head, oh, I dropped it down. Anyway, couldn't be squeamish, go and call me mates. I went and got a chain up, big chain up. As it come up, I've hit it this time, put it right out. I thought I'd put it right out. And got it out, took it out. So now I've took it down on the mess deck. Got it in a sack, put it down on the mess deck. Got it on the mess deck table. All the folks are snoring because there was only a few of us. And I hooked it round the degaussing gear, the wiring. And its towel was on the mess deck. And it was started flapping. Anyway, I put a knife on his towel, then I woke the boys up. 43 pounds this went. That's how big it was. And they was all over the moon. And from then on, it was fish, fish, fish. We supplied the Dartmouth Hotel and all the hotels. We got free beer for all the time we were down there. Every time. And that wasn't the only fish we caught. It was life of lovely. Till what happened? Princess Elizabeth came down and Princess Margaret, sea cadets now, and they'd come out of the ATS, whatever. So you had a bit of, what's the name down there? And I stayed there till we was towed out of there. The wire was towed out and we went round to Harwich, and that was me lot.
And when were you demobilised? It looks like November 46 here.
That's when I finished, but I was demobilised in September.
And what happened when you were demobilised? How did they actually do it? I mean,
I was in went to Cosham. That was the barracks, small barracks in Cosham, and it was nothing to talk of. Anyway, the demob day come up. We went to a place in Cosham itself, behind a petrol station, if I remember rightly. We was all kitted out with suits and that. And then I don't know whether the medical was first or last, but I see a lieutenant commander, and the first thing he noticed was my left arm. He said, "What the hell's that?" I said, "That's how they used to fit them before the war, sir." He said, "My God," he said, "you've done well to keep in the Navy with an arm like that." He said, "Stay as you are." He said, "We'll take you up to Haslam and have that straightened out, and like a four and ever." I could have gone up and pulled out, and it was always a bugbear. Look, you can see it's dead. And anyway, he asked me to do that, and like a four and ever, I went to get home on leave, and which I did then.
Now, what were you to do when you got out of the Navy? I mean, you'd been in a long time by then. You'd had a lot of jobs before the war. Tell me how you got back into your civilian career, because you became a scaffolding erector, I think. How did you get on when you got back?
Well, my cousin Henry, I intend to have volunteer. I told my mother, this is my mother, I said, "I'll probably never have all day like it again. I've got me demob leave, I've got me demob money, and according to what I pay you, it'll last me till Christmas, and I'll start work after Christmas." She said, "Well, as long as I get my money, you can do as you like." That was that. So, anyway, my young cousin, Henry, dead now, he was on deep sea tugs with my brother. They was on the Salvonia, which was a deep sea tug, towed landing barges all over the place. And I told you, he was a sea family. And Henry was one of them. And anyway, his last ship was the Empire John, I think it was. And it paid off and left him loose. And he come round and see me. He said, "Oh, I've got to start work." He said, "How about come with me?" He said, "Me and you have a little couple of weeks' work," he said, "till we get fixed up and properly." And I said, "Well, I'll do that." We went and worked at Millwall in a little oil refinery. I would tell you the name of it any other time.
Doesn't matter. What has?
Just filling oil drums up. And that was my... It wasn't hard work. You could... You handled these 40-gallon drums as easy as after a while and filled them up. And it was a comfortable job. Out in the open most of the time. And winter was coming on. But anyway, my father worked at Barton Power Station. As a desert power station, put my name down, and within 4 weeks, after Christmas, I was in the power station.
What as?
Outdoor labourer. But scaffolding was labouring then, they weren't tradesmen. Semi-skilled, yeah. So I picked up scaffolding in the power station for, I think I was there about 3 or 4 years. Friend of mine come down, working on bomb damage, Sid Strutt again, another ex-Matlow. I watched these working hours at Barking Power Station, and it was when they got in the morning, between 8 and 9, they left at 3 o'clock. I said, "What's all this about, Sid?" He was earning more money than me. He said, "Jim, do you want to be a scavenger?" He said, "You're doing it here." He said, "You might as well work with us." So I've done no more, I went and started scaffolding. Up the city, round St Paul's, all that area is all bomb damage from Mansion House, you can see right through to Ludgate Hill. And we was doing bits and pieces all over the place, arguing with the priests about, in these churches, about war damage, talk about fiddlers.
And that was your career for the rest of your working life?
For the rest of the time. I've become a scaffolder, charge hand scaffolder, had my own gang and went on from there. At times took over an area, like, you know, and as I am.
Now, the only other thing we're interested in is how you got back in touch with some of your old crewmates, because you didn't keep in touch with them after the war, did you?
No.
How did you get back in touch with them? Just briefly, you know.
Let's see. Batman. What happened? Across the road is a friend of mine, Ted, was in the Navy. Called out to me one day. Jim, as the Navy news here, his son was in the Navy, left it with him. He said, "This is interesting. As I opened the page just on this table, there was any witnesses to the Whittaker being sunk." So anyway, there was an address there, Horsham, I think it was at the time. I phoned this Horsham address up and told the woman there was a lot to tell, and she said, "Well, you was on the go." I said, "Yes." She said, "I've already had a phone call from the Goa, from Australia," she said. "A man named Buckman." I said, "Not George Buckman, my old mate George." And she said, "Yes." So she said, "I've got his address." And I've got his address, told her about her husband, and that was it. And there was another one, Phelps, and I contacted about his father killed on Whittaker. But Buckman, straight away, I've wrote to him, and we've wrote. Must be 7 or 8 years now, definitely.
But is it important to you to be in touch with these people? You're in touch with Darcy as well, aren't you?
Well, Darcy, through Buck, I went to a read, and that we talked about that, and I see the first Gestapo group reunion on here. And I wrote off Stratton Hotel, Blackpool, and we went there, and I met Darcy there. Him, Robson, who died since, and me and we only had a look at Darcy, he knew me straight away and I knew him.
And generally it's important for you. Why is it so important to be in touch with these people?
Because it was an era that I never regret doing. I can look back and think myself I stood it, and it never bothered me. I was really pleased to do it. And as simple as that.
Thank you very much.